Our guest today is Dr. Paul Garcia, who is both a practicing neuroanesthesiologist and a research scientist. He serves as an anesthesiologist at the Atlanta VA Medical Center in Decatur and is also involved in research at the Neuroanesthesia Laboratory at the Emory University School of Medicine. What do you do at the VA Medical Center?
I'm both a physician and a researcher. I see patients clinically in the Department of Anesthesiology. I take them carefully and safely through any kind of surgery or procedure, but I also do research on the brain and specifically how our veterans recover from anesthesia and surgery.
Researching the brain after anesthesia sounds fascinating. Could you tell us more about that?
Well, it's not like it makes good cocktail party conversation. I used to kid and say that I'd be a great anesthesiologist because all I have to do to get my patients unconscious is start talking about my research. But I do think that I think it's interesting, and I think that the brain is a very interesting organ. I think that there's a lot of uniqueness to each individual. And, you know, as anesthesiologists, we're always titrating our drugs to a particular effect, watching the patients very carefully during surgery. But I think that for many, many, many years, people have considered just the heart and lungs after the end of an operation. Said, well, it looks like the heart's okay. It looks like they're breathing fine. But haven't really focused on how the brain kind of reboots itself after you've lost consciousness.
What have you learned from this research?
It turns out that we do a very good job with anesthesia for the most part. It's very, very safe to undergo procedures with anesthesia. It's certainly a much more humane way to undergo surgery and procedures. But there are some rare instances where, you know, an anesthetic or unanticipated things could happen during the surgery. But of course, what I'm primarily interested in and what we've been working on for quite some time is that, you know, different people are confused for a different amount of time at the end of their surgery and at the end of their anesthetic. Whereas some people seem to have a very mild response. There's a lot of factors that go into that. Part of that is the patient. Part of that is the surgery that they have. Part of that is inevitably the different kinds of drugs that we may give them to keep them safe and comfortable during surgery. But I think that what's been overlooked is the overlap between sleep and anesthesia. They're similar, but they're not the same. And if you came into surgery and you were maybe you spent all night worrying about your surgery or your case or something like that, you might be particularly tired. And if that were the case, you might wake up very, very sleepy as well because you didn't get a good night's sleep. And there are many people that probably come into surgery without knowledge of inherent sleep disorders or other kinds of problems with things that we call parasomnia. Some people have different kinds of night terrors and that sort of thing. And we don't really know exactly what this means for their post-operative course. And so that's what a lot of the research I do kind of focuses on. It looks at brain waves using what's called EEG or electroencephalogram, the same kind of electrodes that you might use to kind of pick up a heartbeat and look at the electrical activity of the heart. You know, with a different kind of monitor, you can look at the brain waves. And they've been used for nearly half a century to characterize different stages of sleep. But now we're starting to realize that there might be stages of anesthesia that we can examine and define and characterize with EEG. And perhaps the more that we know about these stages of anesthesia, the more that we'll be able to relate them to sleep and have a wake up that's more similar to waking from natural sleep instead of kind of waking from the pharmacologic coma that is anesthesia.
How many drugs are normally used in anesthesia?
I think this is kind of a surprise to a lot of patients that when somebody is rendered unconscious for a surgery or for a procedure, oftentimes they'll get anywhere between about a half dozen to as many as a dozen drugs, all during their stay. Sometimes we give drugs for preoperative anxiety or the jitters. We might give drugs that control the heart rate or the blood pressure. We might give, we certainly are going to continually give you drugs that will maintain kind of an unconsciousness. We're also giving you pain medicine. Sometimes we give anti-inflammatories. We also give antibiotics all at the same time. We give drugs for, to prevent nausea, give drugs to control muscle activity during the case. And sometimes we even have drugs that kind of combat these things, and maybe drugs that bring the blood pressure down, or drugs that bring the blood pressure up, or drugs that inhibit muscle activity, drugs that increase, that reduce that inhibition of muscle activity. So it's not uncommon to receive, you know, double digit numbers of drugs. And we administer a lot of them as anesthesiologists. We carefully titrate them. A lot of them are very, very short acting for their major effects, but maybe their minor effects is perhaps what leads to a kind of a persistence in the immediate and perhaps even beyond just the recovery room, some confusion.
There seems to be a lot of work and observation involved in being an anesthesiologist.
I really enjoy being an anesthesiologist. It's dynamic. People have said before, you know, why do you want to be an anesthesiologist? You seem to have a great personality. Well, it is true that the majority of time that I spend with my patients, they might be unconscious or sedated. But I am fortunate that I get a very intense relationship with their physiology. Blood pressures can go up and down, heart rates can go up and down, pain levels and stimulation can go up and down all during the case. And sometimes I think that at the end of the case, I might know more about this patient's heart or the way that they react to stimuli than any of their heart doctors ever will, you know. It's true that you get this kind of intense relationship with their physiology, but there is a lot of personal side to anesthesiology too. I mean, this is a big day for your patient, and you have to kind of come in early in the morning and let, you know, kind of establish a good relationship with this patient very quickly, because you don't have a lot of time before the surgery is scheduled. It's also excellent if we can kind of see people in our preoperative clinic and help answer questions, and then see them also in the recovery room or perhaps even the day after anesthesia to make sure that things are going okay. But a lot of the communication that anesthesiologists have is with surgeons, is with nurses, is with other hospital staff, where they're going to go once they leave the operating room. When you have an orthopedic surgeon, you know, they are really focused on the bones while they're operating, and that, you know, taking care of the brain or the lungs or the kidneys during the case, that really falls under the realm of an anesthesiologist. And so we look at the rest of the body so that the surgeons can focus just where they're working.
What are some of the common fears people have about anesthesia?
I thought I would hurt more. I thought it would be scarier, or I thought that all of these other things that, you know, I had no idea. A lot of people have no idea what they ought to expect. So we like answering questions. So anybody that has a question, right, we want to make everybody feel comfortable. I look forward to a day where perhaps coming in for a surgical procedure is really a pleasant experience. Maybe if we refine our anesthetic technique, and I've got some interesting kind of laboratory work also that aims to improve the cognition at the end of surgery, I could see, you know, with all the benefits that a good night's sleep gives you, perhaps we'll be able to one day control our anesthetic drugs well enough that we could use them therapeutically to rest someone. Mm-hmm. I think that would be really interesting. We've got some very preliminary research that I do in the laboratory, not with humans, but that suggests that this could be the case.
Is that where your research is going?
Yes. I've got, you know, several projects going on at the same time. The one I spoke about earlier with EEG does involve humans, and it doesn't involve any study drugs. It's not any kind of placebos or any kind of controlled drug trial like that. It's simply getting the information that we would be getting anyway and looking, kind of observing to see how much sleep is a part of a particular person's anesthetic and asking them some very specific questions about their sleep habits. Some of the work that we do with some very noble animal models, with cell culture, with other kinds of laboratory experiments where we, you know, that involves a lot of microscopy, we're starting to understand how our anesthetic drugs affect learning and memory, and what can we do to make that unconscious state look maybe more like sleep, or maybe have less of an impact on the networks that control learning and memory.
What do you tell veterans that might make them feel less apprehensive about anesthesia?
Well, I would say to the veterans that if you have questions, we like to answer them. If you have concerns, that's an understandable reaction. It's okay to be a little scared. We can give you some medications that kind of help with some of the anxiety. And sometimes knowledge is power, and knowledge helps with that anxiety. Sometimes people are scared and they don't really know what they're scared about. And I think that that's the time that a good kind word, some sincerity in your approach to a patient can kind of go a long way. And I think that some patients are hard to read in that brief period that you get before we're ready to move back to surgery. And there are some people that you might want to say, don't worry, we're really prepared for this. We expect everything's going to be just fine. And we do this all the time. We're trained in this. This is nothing out of the ordinary for us. I don't like to ever say things like, oh, it's not a big deal. If it makes somebody feel better to say it's not a big deal, I'm happy to say that. But I think that we all kind of know that that's a little lie for a lot of these cases. And our veterans are bright and proud people that are much braver than I have been and exhibited that bravery. And it makes me really feel privileged to show my patriotism by being a VA doctor. And I think that these are the people that we can be honest with about what we do and tell them, yeah, we're here to take care of you. Our primary goal is your safety through this procedure or through this surgery. My secondary goal is to make sure that you are as comfortable as you can be. I like to try and set expectations for pain afterwards as well. I say, you know, you can't really get something for nothing. I said, you will be a little sore after most procedures, but my job is to make it bearable, right? Because sometimes, you know, we can't keep you unconscious and feeling no pain forever until you recover totally from your surgery. That probably wouldn't be very good for you. Mm-hmm. Certainly your family might miss you if it was a long recovery as well. So I think that it's important to kind of set those expectations. Some people come in and they say, I don't want to feel anything. I try to say, well, we're not interested in having you be uncomfortable, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a lot of what we do.
Are there times when you don't use a lot of anesthesia during a surgery?
Well, maybe one of the ways we're going to keep you comfortable is to kind of give you some sedation medicine, because this is a smaller procedure or it's on your hand and we don't need to get you all the way unconscious for this procedure. But don't worry, we'll make sure that you are comfortable with this, and we're going to kind of numb up your hand or something like that. This is something that not a lot of people have heard of. It might be like a regional technique where we numb up part of the leg that they're going to be operating on. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes we think that a better way to avoid some of the grogginess after surgery is to, before you go back for surgery, is to identify with an ultrasound some of the nerves that maybe control your shoulder before you have shoulder surgery, control the pain in your shoulder. And we can kind of inject some medicine that's like the dentists use for teeth, that's like Novocaine, a cousin of Novocaine. And you'll feel just all that bite and the sting out of that shoulder will be taken away. You'll still feel a little sore, but it will be a little numb after the procedure. And if we do that before the procedure, the recovery sometimes is so much nicer and more pleasant for the individual.
We would like to thank Dr. Paul Garcia, anesthesiologist and research scientist at the Atlanta VA Medical Center, for being with us on this episode of ViaGARS. The Atlanta VA Rehabilitation Research and Development Center of Excellence for Visual and Neurocognitive Rehabilitation, CVNR, and the Atlanta Office of the Birmingham Atlanta VA Geriatric Research, Education, and Clinical Center, GREC, proudly partner with GARS to reach veterans and their loved ones with information about research and services at the Atlanta VA Medical Center through this monthly broadcast, Veterans Information at GARS. The CVNR's mission is to foster the health and well-being of veterans through uniquely synergistic research impacting visual and or neurocognitive function. The mission of the GREC is to improve VA healthcare delivery to effectively meet the medical, psychological, and social needs of older veterans through research, education, and clinical services with a special focus on mobility, palliative care, and incontinence.